Have you been avoiding conflict lately? Are you afraid that if you speak your truth to someone, you might damage the relationship permanently? Is inner conflict eating you up inside? Maybe you're thinking one thing, but doing another, and you just can't seem to get your head and heart to line up. As humans, we all deal with conflict. Join Jennifer McKenna now as she talks to business leaders about the importance of conflict and how we can all move through it with greater grace and ease, ultimately taking our relationships and our lives to the next level by facing conflict courageously.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Conflict Rising. Every week we talk about something that's conflict-inducing or can be, and try to give everyone tips and tools on how we can move forward through that conflict. So last week we talked about inner conflict when we're trying to take on healthier habits and fitness and lifestyle changes, how a lot of mixed information can be out there in the media and we don't know where to start, and so sometimes we give up before we begin. This week we're going to more of a macro view, and we're going to talk about the environment. So this week's topic is the truth about environmental issues and how we should dare to change from an engineer's perspective. So we have a guest this week, Dr. Bradley Layton, and I will let him give his background, but welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jennifer. It's great to be here.
Yes. So can you tell us, first of all, what got you into the industry? What made you want to be an environmental engineer or scientist?
Sure. That's a long story, I guess, but I'll try to make it brief. I have been a professor since about 2003, and I've always been interested in efficiency as an engineer. I remember just growing up as a kid, very intrigued by how the world worked, and just sort of watching things as simple as bicycles rolling down hills and playing with soccer balls and things, and just sort of being fascinated by energy. From there, I went off to college. I went to MIT for my undergraduate degree. And after that, I pursued a seat on the U.S. rowing team. So I was always very concerned with efficiency. You know, how does one put, one's physical energy into moving something like a boat? And then after a stint there with the U.S. team, I went back to graduate school and got a degree in biomedical engineering. I got my doctorate at the University of Michigan. And while I was there, my advisor was very into battery technology. And as we know, battery and storage energy technologies are becoming more and more prevalent as we move away from fossil fuels. And while that was not the topic of my thesis, I sort of always had that that notion of the emerging technologies in the back of my mind. So when I became a professor at Drexel University, even though I was studying a lot of kind of nerdy biotech, nanotech, I was still very interested in renewable energy. So when I had students approaching me there at Drexel, my own engineering students, saying, hey, we want to build solar cars, we want to build wind turbines, they couldn't really find another faculty member to do that with them. So I said, yeah, let's go for it. And we built a solar car, took it down to Houston, and actually won first prize. We were featured in National Geographic, and I really changed my focus there from kind of nanobio into renewable energy, and then became acutely aware of some of our nation's energy policies, and wrote my first paper on the topic. I started writing the thing in 2004, and I can tell you a few more stories as we get into it about the challenges of getting that paper published, but it was published in 2008. I shifted gears to renewable energy, joined the faculty at the University of Montana in 2010, and have since made a career out of renewable energy technology.
Very cool. So what an illustrious background you have. And for listeners, just so you know, just so our listeners know, Dr. Layton and I grew up together, so I'm going to call him Brad, but you all can call him Dr. Layton.
Or Dr. Brad.
But it is well earned, as you can all hear. So it is interesting, though, how you've woven kind of all of your life experiences into your current career path. a lot of times, you know, we get into careers for one reason and we stay in them for another. And so I know for myself, I wanted to talk about this on this show because right now, the state of the environment and the way we are handling it is inducing tremendous conflict for many of us around the globe. There are a lot of people like myself who feel like, okay, we have how many scientists who have declared climate change, and we have how much information about the importance of recycling and being just more respectful toward the environment and finding new ways to sustain future generations on this planet. And when we have people in high leadership positions who have tremendous influence over the cultural changes, policy changes, behavioral changes as a result of both of those two, who don't agree with that and who are just defiant, in my opinion, and that is an opinion, about all those facts, it causes a lot of conflict among those of us who are trying to be more honorable toward the environment. So when we hear about, you know, President Trump denying climate change, and then we hear about our relationship with China has become a little tense, should I say, to the point where our recycling efforts aren't what they were before. We've regressed dramatically, according to some of the news sources that I've been keeping up on. So that's why I wanted you on the show. I want you to set us straight on facts. I want you to tell us why you are passionate about this, why we should be passionate about this, and what we can do about it. So that's what I'd like to cover in the hour. We're going to have a couple of commercial breaks coming up. But can we start with the passion? Because you can hear mine.
Sure.
I'd like to hear yours.
Right.
What are you passionate about around this? With, you know this so much more intimately than the rest of us. So tell me about your passion. Where is it originating today?
Sure, I sure will. And so, you know, going back to, again, my faculty time there at Drexel University in Philadelphia, you know, it was during, it was right after the United States had declared war on Iraq. And, you know, I, like a lot of other Americans, were listening to the radio and listening to these so-called justifications for the invasion of Iraq. And, you know, we'd all been aware of the apparent motivation for protecting Kuwait in the 90s and some of the bad things that Saddam Hussein was certainly guilty of. But I was also wondering, well, you know, gosh, why do we need this oil? What's the big deal about oil? And as an engineer, as a numbers guy, I couldn't help but sit down and try to figure out the so-called techno-economics. I mean, we all know that oil is good for making gasoline, making plastics, making lubricants, et cetera, as we also know, it's a finite source on planet Earth. And when I sat down and did some of the numbers, I discovered that, oh my gosh, you know, we really only started extracting oil about 150 years ago. And if you know, since this is an online show, and if you've got you know, listeners either listening live or later on, I encourage them to go to a website called Worldometers. Just worldometers.info, and there you'll find a lot of current global statistics on population, the amount of oil left, the amount of natural gas left, et cetera, and just sitting down to do the math, I realized, wow, we're actually burning through oil about 10 million times faster than it was created naturally. So obviously a 10 million to 1 extraction ratio, if you did something like that with your bank, obviously that would be unsustainable. So that was a big shocking number to me. I also realized through some of my research that, you know, through the Nixon administration, that all international oil sales have to be made in U.S. dollars. You cannot just sell them in your local currency. That was part of the Nixon administration deal, which obviously ties this finite dwindling resource to the dollar, thus propping up the U.S. economy. So when I just ran the numbers like that, it became very clear, oh, that we could economically justify the invasion for a company in order to gain access to stable oil prices. And most of that is incontrovertible. I was also riding my bicycle to and from my house to my office about 9 miles each way and thinking, my goodness, you know, here I am, just a human, you know, riding along at just a fraction of a horsepower, just a few 100 watts, and I'm in traffic with these, you know, trucks and cars, and how much energy are they expending really to do the same thing as I am, just getting to and from work. So I just saw all of this inequity, both, as I mentioned, in terms of our economic policy, in terms of sustaining low oil prices around the world, and also, gosh, what if we could just do a better job and not have to burn the stuff in the first place? So that was the motivation for writing my 2008 paper. And if your listeners want to go, it's a pretty easy Google. It's just Leighton 2008 renewable energy, and it's there on ResearchGate. And I've been amazed, actually, Jennifer. This paper has more or less gone viral. I mean, it was published almost 10 years ago, and normally, if you're lucky, if you get 10 or 20 people to read your paper, and this one is approaching 5,000 reads right now. So
wow.
It's certainly gotten some eyeballs on it. So that was the initiation of just trying to sit down and put some numbers on this, and really to put it in comparison. Just oil is just so energy dense. It's actually, you know, believe it or not, about 10 quadrillion times, so, you know, 10,000 trillion times more dense than, you know, the equivalent amount of sunlight. You know, just think of a barrel of sunlight versus a barrel of oil. It's just incomprehensible, really, how nature has concentrated that energy source for us versus trying to, you know, do the renewables, which can sometimes be a challenge. So that was really my story and my initiation for sort of taking this on as a career path, looking at it globally, and then, as I mentioned before, doing something about it locally through education.
And so with all the research that you've done, and then I'm sure, you know, you keep up with current headlines and so forth, where do you think the most conflict is coming from a consumer standpoint? So where's the mixed information or the misinformation, and what do you think the detriment to that is? In other words, what do people actually need to know versus what they're starting to understand?
Right.
Do you have an opinion about that? Do you have some thoughts?
Yeah, I sure do. And I've been very fortunate at the University of Montana to have as a colleague Steve Running. Steve Running was on the International Council for Climate Change, international panel, and he actually won, shared the Nobel Prize with Al Gore in 2006 because in the 80s, Steve Running was sending satellites up into orbit, and these were NASA-funded missions, and rather than looking out into space, these satellites were looking back at Earth, and it was very easy from that altitude to say, gosh, you know, what's happening to the forest? These forests are just disappearing, and you know, what's happening to the polar ice caps? They're just dwindling, and so to have compelling images like that, I don't know how you argue with data like that.
Wow.
You know, and then of course, if we go and look at the there's a few other papers. One is by Solomon. And the title is The Persistence of Climate Change is Due to a Range of Greenhouse Gases. So, you know, the fact that carbon dioxide, methane, in fact, water, trap greenhouse gases, that's been known for centuries, that's no secret. And if it weren't for greenhouse gases, the world would be a lot colder than it is. The concern is with increasing concentrations. Of course, you have you get into what's, you know, an imbalance, right? You know, more energy is staying in the atmosphere than otherwise would, just because you have these heavier gases that trap the longer wavelengths that otherwise would be heading back out into space. So, Dr. Running was actually banned from speaking at some high schools in Montana, especially, you know, because of a variety of reasons. You know, one is you know, the Montana economy is still very much driven, by the extractive fossil fuels, you know, really coal, oil, and natural gas, all three. And for him to be saying that, you know, putting carbon in the atmosphere is bad for the planet, well, then that ends up being bad for the Montana economy. And so, unfortunately, that's the struggle that we see a lot of times in the discussions on climate change is that, well, gosh, how can we have a global economy if we don't keep using these fossil fuels? You know, how do we keep the lights on? How do we drive our cars and make electricity, et cetera? So I think a lot of it just stems from, you know, unfortunately, economic interest, as I mentioned before. And I think a lot of people are not willing to accept the fact that, you know, humans might be having some kind of impact on the environment. Maybe there's some guilt there, and I don't have it at my fingertips, but Dr. Running a few years ago wrote an interesting paper on sort of the seven steps of acceptance, you know, similar to the seven steps that people go through with loss. Mm-hmm. You know, one of them's disbelief, and then there's anger, et cetera, and finally we get around to acceptance. But he had to approach it from more of a psychological standpoint than simply the scientific standpoint that I was mentioning earlier.
Well, and I wonder if producing something like that from a psychological standpoint helps those who are further down the road with their awareness and their acceptance to have a little bit more empathy for those who haven't come along yet instead of anger, right? Because we can be angry at people all day long, and in the end, that only hurts us. Unless it propels us to positive action, then it's only hurting us to sit there and remain bitter and resentful that other people are taking control and impacting our lives in ways we don't agree.
Right.
So I can understand the correlation between needing to put that psychological process into the conversation.
Yep.
I also love where you're going with this around the economic issue. And so we're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, I want to pick up that conversation where we left off. So
Sounds great. Stay tuned.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Namaste, friends. This is Deva Pramal and Mitten. And we wanted to let you know that we will be in America and Canada this May. We'll be coming with our Wings of Mantra World Tour, coming up the West Coast to Boulder, Santa Fe, Sedona, Scottsdale, Santa Barbara, L.A., Marin, Santa Cruz, San Jose, Escondido, Edmonds, and up to Canada to Victoria and Vancouver. You can find details on our website, devapramalmiten.com. Hope to see you there. Lots of love. Namaste.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. OM Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
Opiates has taken everything and everyone I've ever loved away from me. Everything.
I blew my ankle out and I got prescribed pain pills by my doctor.
If making my detox public is going to help somebody, I'm all for it. So I just wish I would have had a warning.
Opioid dependence can happen after just 5 days. Know the truth, spread the truth. A message from Truth, the Ad Council, and ONDCP.
Welcome back, everyone. We're with Dr. Bradley Layton, who is the CEO of Integration Energy and has a very illustrious background in all kinds of environmental engineering perspectives that will help us as consumers to understand better what the situation really is, to deal with the conflict that we are feeling about the state of the environment, and to help us by the end of the hour figure out what we can actually do, something actionable. So where we picked up was you were making the connection between economic interest, and I think this is a huge factor when it comes to conflict in cultures. Because you have so many commercial interests involved in big topics that make such sweeping impacts on whole populations. And I even see this in the workplace. You know, you have corporations that are making short-sighted decisions for a quick return on investment, or to show a better profit margin, or to be able to show a stronger stock price for their shareholders. There's all kinds of economic motivators in every area of the world and at the highest levels of decision making. So you were starting to speak about how we're doing that when it comes to the environment. And I found it fascinating, not shocking, unfortunately, but fascinating that, was it Dr. Running you were talking about? Do I have his name correct?
Dr. Stephen Running, yes.
Dr. Running, yes, yes. So here is this man who's won a Nobel Peace Prize and is being banned from speaking to high schools.
It was bizarre.
That is astounding.
Yeah.
It is astounding. Yeah. So, you know, what does that say about our cultural influences, that we want to stay away from those things that invoke peace and prosperity, and we just want some fat cash on the front end for a few people. So anyway, I'm obviously being very, I don't know, I'm being a little facetious here, but there is a lot of truth and a lot of depressing takeaways from that. And that is the reality, that this is what's happening. And I'm sure it's not just happening in Montana, as we see on those national conversations with our, you know, leaders in the federal government. So talk to me about hope.
Okay. Sure. So as you mentioned, I have a few companies, and I'll just mention them. One you mentioned at the top of the hour is Integration Energy, and what we've put together there, Jennifer, for our investors, is sort of a four-legged stool. And one of my partners is very much into organic food and using foods that are grown without petrochemical fertilizers. I have another business partner who has been working on biofuel production, so actually taking some of the woody biomass out of the forest that becomes a huge danger, a huge liability. You know, our national parks are on fire, and rather than just having that as a liability, taking that woody biomass and either turning it into some type of biofuel, either solid or liquid, or turning it into biochar. And biochar, or biocarbon as we call it, forms the third leg of the stool, and that's just taking hazardous wood, you know, wood that was going to catch on fire, and making a soil enhancement product known as biochar. And so right now, our sister company, Biochar Now in Colorado, is actually doing a really neat cleanup of the South River in New Jersey. So for about a century, DuPont was creating nylon, and one of the byproducts of nylon, one of the catalysts, was mercury. So unfortunately, a lot of this mercury was going into the river, but we were able to use this char, this biocarbon now, to keep that mercury out of the water, out of the soil, so people can swim and fish there again. So the third leg of the stool, we call it fertilizer. It's a carbon that goes back into the earth and either purifies the soil or is used as an organic fertilizer. And then the fourth leg of the stool, I just kind of, with the food, fuel, fertilizer, we call that fusion. So that's obviously solar electricity or energy that's coming from the sun, and obviously that's you know, how the sun makes its energy through fusion. So those are really the four legs of the stool, and I'm talking to you now from a company called SADC here in Missoula, Montana. SADC's been in business for about 10 years. And really the first thing to do in terms of, you know, moving away from over-dependence on non-renewable fossil fuels is to save energy in the first place. And so another one of the papers that I might point your listeners to is Schramsky, and the title is quite ominous, but this was published in 2015, and Schramsky wrote a paper called Human Domination of the Biosphere, Rapid Discharge of the Earth Space Battery Foretells the Future of Humankind. And one of the most poignant figures in the Schramsky paper, Jennifer, was one that was showing the energy consumption per capita. And so, as it turns out, North Americans consume about six times the global average of energy. So every person on Earth obviously needs metabolic energy. We all need energy to eat, and that's you know, that's your typical 2,000, 2,500 calories, and that can come from a variety of sources. But we also need technological energy. So you could even think of when humans were first taming the horse was your technology, and you had one horsepower at your disposal. Well, now that we have homes and cars and computers, that technological energy budget is now much greater. And as I was mentioning, the North American budget is about 1,200 megajoules per day, whereas the global average is about 200. So we're six times. And what we're starting to see, though, we're starting to see people becoming more aware of that. And, well, gosh, if I insulate my home with a product that we have here called Static Shield, it was actually insulation that was made for the Apollo missions and the space shuttle. Now I don't have to spend as much money and as much waste on fossil fuels if that's how the home is heated. And so that's one example of how humanity has actually started to turn the corner. So going back to that Schramsky paper, the energy per capita on planet Earth peaked a few years ago. And that's either because of sort of energy poverty, there's just less energy to go around, or people are becoming more efficient, right? So just using less energy to do the same amount of work as the otherwise, or some combination thereof. So that's an example of something that I've observed recently from the larger literature, and even just people I know just becoming more energy efficient, energy conscious.
Yes, and so I want to hope that it is the latter, right? That people are more conscientious in their practices. Mm-hmm. I know for myself that my children are now teenagers, and when they were in early elementary school, they did start teaching in the school systems, the whole reuse, recycle, renew, I'm sure I'm saying it wrong, but there was that whole kind of, there are a lot of R's, and I'm sure I'm saying one of them wrong, but it did make them mindful from a very early stage, which made it easier to adopt good habits at home,
sure.
Which then a couple years later, hopefully we're seeing that impact, that as we call it in business, managing up, right? If your boss mm-hmm. needs to change something, then you got to tell him or her. It's the same thing at home, right? The kids can come home and influence the parents' behavior sometimes. And so I loved when I saw that movement. And all of that, we were gaining a lot of great momentum before this whole administration moved in and said, okay, we don't care about an inconvenient truth.
Right.
And we're denying every single scientific report out there, which there are probably hundreds, if not thousands. So you are giving me hope, because we as consumers oftentimes think just to the extent of reuse or recycle, right? So let me go through my kitchen and make sure that everything I'm using comes out of the trash can and goes to the recycling bin. And so when we hear that upwards of, 70, 80, 90% of that is no longer being recycled?
Yeah.
It's depressing. And so what you're saying to me is there are all these other areas that we can still make an impact.
That's right. And despite some of the global and national numbers and the lack of leadership right now in terms of, sort of pointing the ship in the right direction, there's a tremendous amount of municipal leadership. Even today, I was speaking with a client in North Carolina, and you know, I was just talking about where he lives. And he goes, "Well, I live in an eco village in North Carolina." And I said, "Well, gosh, what do you do with your solid waste streams?" He said, "Well, they're lucky enough; they can still have their plastics and glass recycled and remanufactured, and that tends to be the you know, people think, well, I'm recycling. Well, gosh, you know, where does that go after it leaves your stream? Mm-hmm. Is it actually going back into a new product or not?" And you know, right there in their little community, they were even composting cardboard. Right, you know, the cardboard is just it was a tree not too long ago and would turn back into soil. So, you know, for me, I'm always interested in what's next. You know, what's the next use of that particular material? And earlier this spring, I wrapped up a course that I was teaching at the University of Montana called Zero Waste in the Last Best Place. And if you go out, then my book of the same title was just published early last year, and there's a tremendous number of zero waste articles out there, papers out there, practices, because you know you look and say, well, gosh, all of this stuff that you know flowing through my life and is either broken or no longer useful, do I really want to leave a legacy of having all these giant landfills out there? And if you get a chance, I was sort of waxing on about this to my students once. They said, "Well, gosh, you really need to watch the movie Idiocracy." And this actor Terry Crews is making a splash right now. He was one of the actors and sort of making fun of the current state of our national leadership even then. And the opening scene was this landslide coming off of a giant landfill that was 400 years in the future, sort of a Wall-E-esque world. And you know, for me, seeing that amount of waste, it really just comes down to, gosh, just lack of imagination, lack of industry, lack of people being creative to turn these, you know, really hard-won materials. Just think of where, you know, what it took to make all those plastics, to make that glass, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's really time to, you know, take those materials and put them back into our infrastructure. And that's really what I talk about a lot in my Zero Waste book, is how do we do that?
Yes, and I love that. And I also really appreciate the fact that you are doing that in multiple ways professionally. And I think that it can be very inspirational for others and for listeners who are involved in the conversation in their own communities. Because I think that your business model can inspire new behaviors, new ways of thinking, new ways of approaching how we, quote unquote, do life, right? It's a paradigm shift. It's a complete paradigm shift. Yeah. And that's what I'm really invested in, is continuing those types of conversations so that we move past the anger, we move past the disbelief and feeling duped and feeling helpless, and move into just a new frame of mind and allow that to spread, right? Because we can create the culture we want over time in spite of the challenges. And I think that you are doing that so masterfully, which is why I had you on the show, by the way. But
well, thank you.
So I know we're going to have to take another commercial break in just a minute, but I want to dig a little bit deeper, if you don't mind, into the four legs of your stool.
Sure.
And can we talk about each one of them with a little bit more depth so that you can give listeners an understanding of these different types of energy, you know,
sure.
Paradigm shifts, as I'm calling them.
Sure, yeah.
Because I think that as people hear what you're doing, it can inspire other ideas, other entrepreneurs, consumers to look at what they're doing differently and so forth. And so that by the end of the hour, we can give some real tangible tips and tools for what, you know, the regular guy like myself on the street can do. So
sure.
You gave the four Fs. Can you start it to do a deep dive quickly, and then we'll have to break for commercial and we'll come back to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think most people know what solar energy is. And the nice thing about solar right now is that it's reached so-called grid parity. It's now the same cost to build a solar plant as it is to build a fossil fuel plant. So, the price of solar has come down so far that we're really seeing a tremendous growth. In fact, I think the amount of solar that's being installed globally, it's almost doubling each year. In China, in the U.S., despite the tariffs, et cetera. So that's the fusion leg, and I think most people see that. And psychologically, I think what happens when you see, gosh, my neighbor has solar, and I just drove by a business with solar, the dominoes start to tumble, if you will, and it becomes sort of a self-reinforcing thing. So I see a strong future in solar for us, and that's the fusion leg. The other three are really tied together, and they're really tied together, Jennifer, through carbon. And carbon is the sixth element sitting there on the periodic table, and it remembering back even to high school, Mr. Shuley's science, chemistry class, he's like, carbon is the most prolific and the most gregarious element on the periodic table. It will hang out with anybody. There's more, carbon compounds than just about anything, and now we've got carbon nanotubes, et cetera, and there's entire disciplines devoted to it. In fact, that's what all of organic chemistry is made of. Our own bodies are made of carbon. But so with the other three legs, we're really talking about carbon management. And rather than having an extractive industry, and Elon Musk refers to this as the turd in the punch bowl. He's actually got a 13-minute talk out there called the turd in the punch bowl, and it's like, great, the economy's going great. We've got all these neat technologies, but oh no, why are we pumping all this carbon into the atmosphere? Let's keep that carbon out of the atmosphere. Well, where are we going to put it? Well, we don't want it in the ocean. We know what that does. It's acidification. So where else do you put it? Well, you put it back in the ground. So growing up where we did in the Midwest, you're driving along like, oh, my gosh, look at that black soil, that beautiful black soil. Why is it black? There's carbon in it. Pretty simple. So the other three legs are taking carbon, for example, out of the forest, and the number of forest fires that's happening is just – it's just phenomenal. And I think we're at a point now where, rather than the bad old days of clear cutting, et cetera, we have some very advanced forest management practices for selective thinning. But if these trees don't have an actual value, you can't make a house out of it or whatever, there's not enough demand for it, what we do, we take that and turn it into biochar or biocarbon. And the beautiful thing about the biochar is that, again, that carbon is such a sponge. I was mentioning earlier it can pull heavy metals out of mining sites. It's also great at attaching phosphorus. So when you see all these blooms and things that are killing fish in the Gulf of Mexico, most of which is a result of runoff from lawns, people over-fertilizing lawns, or a runoff from agriculture, if properly placed, this biochar or carbon can actually soak that up before it ever makes it out into our waterways and streams. And now you've got this really neat mixture of the carbon, which you want in the soil anyway, and all the good stuff that you put on the fields in the first place. So the carbon, the fertilizer leg is really my favorite right now, because then it will help us grow food, which is the other leg, and help us move away from the fossil fuels that we currently rely on for so-called conventional fertilizers. So that's the deep dive.
Okay, well, so I've got more questions when we come back.
Sounds great.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of Om Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of Om Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the last portion of our show. We have Dr. Bradley Layton, who is the CEO of Integration Energy, and he's active in multiple companies. But right now, I guess I'm forcing you to focus on this one because I'm passionate about what you do there. If you want to interject more information outside of Integration Energy, please feel free to do so. But I have asked you to do a deep dive into these four Fs: food, fuel, fertilizer, and fusion. And as we went to a commercial break, you were talking about how fertilizer is kind of your favorite right now because of all that you can do with it. And I have to tell you that in some of our conversations off the air, I have been really educated by our conversations, and I get energized when I think about what you're doing. And so I want to make sure everyone heard what you mentioned in the beginning, which is this biochar, what you create, it takes matter that is considered waste, and instead of allowing it to just be waste, you are able to turn it into a fertilizer that, unlike commercial fertilizers today that strip the soil of its nutrients, it actually replenishes. Am I saying that right?
That's right. You know, another really good analogy for biochar, I like to call it a molecular sponge. So in addition to the chemical properties of carbon that likes to attract a variety of different other elements, it also holds water. So what we're seeing in even last year, I don't know if you recall, but a year or two ago, there was a large dam break in California. They had huge flooding, and this dam burst and really took out a community. And as they were rebuilding, there was a community soccer field there. And as we know, water shortages are becoming a bigger and bigger deal all the time in California. So rather than just replanting conventionally, they actually mixed some of this biochar into the soil in order to reduce water demand. So there's in addition to agriculture, there's the soccer field. We're seeing that with golf courses. So the biochar, the biocarbon, will hold on to that water longer. So when either water coming up from the aquifer, or rainwater, or even conventional sprinkling, the char, the carbon, will hold that water longer rather than having it just simply drain through the soil or evaporate away. So that's yet another example of the application of biochar.
That's,
and there's plenty more too.
Yeah, right. And every time we talk, I learn more about it, and it's fascinating. So my next question is it available for mass production? Is this a fertilizer that consumers can access?
It is. Yeah. In fact, so right now, one of Integration Energy's sister companies, we just call it Biocarbon Technologies, and we have a website up and a product list as well. And as we speak, Jennifer, we're putting together an opportunity zone here in Montana. So one of the interesting quirks of this year's tax law. So this is actually an example, and we're using it in a specific way, obviously. But one example of this year's tax law is that people who are going to have to pay large capital gains, rather than just sending that money to the Fed, they can actually defer it or redirect it into their local economy. And there are these so-called opportunity zones all across the United States. We were just briefed on it here in Missoula by some city leaders not too long ago. And the idea is, rather than, again, putting that into the federal government where you don't really have much say or control over where your money goes, we've actually created an opportunity zone. We're just calling it the Big Sky Green Fund. And the idea is to allow people, you know, with an eye to the future, with an interest in investing in sustainable technologies, to be able to put that money in our company, Biocarbon Technologies, and then watch that money grow as the demand increases for biochar and as our production increases as well. So we're really trying to hit sort of a mid-scale production level on the order of 20 tons or so per day, which is considered mid-scale. So the answer is yes, it is available commercially, and it's also something that is best produced locally and regionally, right? Otherwise, you end up with this shipping carbon footprint, as it were. So that's really where we're focusing with the production of our own biochar here in Montana, and also trying to build what we call an energy park, something that's off-grid, that's not reliant on fossil fuel-produced electricity or natural gas. So that's another big focus, obviously, of Integration Energy to maintain that fusion leg, that solar leg of our company.
So if someone is listening and they wanted to invest in this because they find it as exciting as I do, would they invest in getting the actual fertilizer, or would they invest in your team coming to their community to produce it?
Right. So the most direct way to invest right now would be to contact us and invest in the Big Sky Green Fund, and that would allow us to produce it here in Montana. And you know, we're able to ship nationally. Like I said, our sister company, Biochar Now in Colorado, is doing a remediation project in Virginia. And just based on the commodity prices that we're seeing in biochar, I think globally it's something on the order of maybe globally $1 billion industry or so. And all of the economic indicators that we're seeing, and these are from some of the large trusted firms, is really double-digit growth annually, and a doubling or tripling of the market size within the next 3 to 5 years. So we're just one cog in the wheel, but we also feel like we've been studying and researching this for a long enough time that we're really poised to make a big splash in the industry.
Well, and what it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the more you're able to do, and though others are maybe doing similar things, but when we grow the need, because we've grown the awareness, right? If we're increasing awareness that this is a possibility and that this is happening and all the benefits of what it does, then over time, don't we then shift, again, going back to the managing up thought process, that we as consumers, or even business owners who are investors, or your commercial brokers, or however you want to categorize them, but the over time this movement pushes up onto the industry.
Yeah, I think
right.
It does.
It's a simple supply and demand. It's a simple we're going to demand more, so you better start supplying more.
Right. Yeah, and I think we'll reach a point, again, with carbon management, in the same way I mentioned that solar panels have now reached grid parity with fossil fuels. I think we'll reach a point with carbon management, even with waste management, where we do see sort of a tipping point and moving towards what's frequently called a circular economy. And in a circular economy rather than a linear economy, nothing goes to waste. Every waste stream becomes the raw materials for another manufacturing stream. And that's my hope, that just becomes a way of life. There are a few villages
right. In
Japan that have done that. I know there are communities in Holland that are moving this direction, in Germany. And so, rather than going back to the bad old days of having to, dominate the planet for these dwindling global resources, we're now able to sort of look inward and say, gosh, look at our own, waste streams and trust streams, if you will, build our local economies to, in effect, strengthen the global economy as well as the global ecosystems that are in place.
Yeah. So to the listeners out there, think about this. We can be part of that movement. We can be part of the transformation. And so that's what this show is all about. Instead of using all of our energy being angry and arguing with our neighbor who sees things differently, and we feel like they're part of the problem because they're part of the whole political movement of denying the problem, instead of investing all of our energy in that fight, we can be channeling our energy toward the solution. And that's what I'm hearing you provide for us, is a laundry list of different things that are happening right now to overcome the state of the environment right now. And so we're theoretically in the cutting edge part of the era, right? That we can look back on historically and say, this was a pivotal moment when we turned a corner on the way we consume.
Yeah.
True?
I really hope so. Yeah. One of the big mental shifts for me in moving from Philadelphia to Montana, I was channeling a lot of energy into this anger and hand-wringing and perseveration. And when I moved to Montana, I said, gosh, that was just such a huge mental burden,
yeah,
thinking about all the waste and all the inequity. And when I moved here, I said, well, gosh, I'm just going to become as big a part of the solution as I can. That's why I took the leadership position at the university, and now I'm doing that in my own engineering private practice in the companies that we mentioned. And it's been very refreshing and not always easy, of course, but a fun ride, as long as I keep my mind focused on the future and what the Earth could and should look like.
Well, and so, I represent more of the average consumer, that it's not my career path. I am inspired by your career path. I am, a consultant in the workplace, and I do change. That's what I do. I help people change. I help them change their cultures in the workplace. I help them change their behaviors and so forth. And this show is about doing that on a mass level, right? What are our macro cultural issues? Where is the conflict holding us back, and how can we use it to propel us forward? And, you telling that story is awesome. It's very powerful, because even you, who is on the front line of making that change, had to first go through dealing with your conflict in order to get to a place where you felt empowered to do something. And I think that's what everyone goes through. And right now, in the conversation around the environment, what I'm hearing you say is there are all kinds of ways we can make change. And so as an average consumer, I just want to share, for those of you that live in a city and you're not a bioengineer and you don't have control over your recycling efforts, all you can do is throw it in a bin and hope the city takes care of it. I have little pots of organic soil in my backyard where I'm just growing strawberries and lettuce and peppers. And there's just little bitty ways where, even though I'm not making a mass difference, and I certainly am not patting myself on the back because there are 1,000 more things I could be doing, but every little bit starts the gravitational pull toward the bigger behavior changes, toward the bigger paradigm shifts. So I encourage everyone, just start where you are and don't feel defeated by the bigger picture argument. Just start where you are and make a small impact that can over time become a cultural shift when your neighbor sees, another thing that I started doing was composting. So I have this big barrel in my backyard. Now I don't have a backyard. I need to really explain this to everyone. I am a city girl. I have a big concrete driveway next to a very tiny patch of land.
Yeah.
And I share a driveway with my next door neighbor. Sure. So there really isn't a yard per se. But in that little patch of land, I have my composter. I have my little organic pots. And I have my recycling bin. So it's a start, right? And so the more you talked about the solar panels, I was thinking, wow, I need to replace my roof. Do I need to do that and consider solar panels simultaneously? Or are those two decisions separate from one another? Can you answer that question?
Yeah, you know, Georgia's a very sunny state. I've lived there myself. I used to live in Augusta, Georgia, and one thing we have been experimenting with, which has been a lot of fun, is just rather than using the conventional roofing, is just putting the solar panels right on the rafters and then just sealing them. So the two answers could go hand in hand. You know, you could either go with the conventional racking system, which is what we do for a lot of our clients here in Montana and elsewhere, or even just go with the next gen, and when the roof comes off, just put the solar panels on and a little insulation and some static shield that I was mentioning earlier, and it'll be all set.
Good to go. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm probably going to follow up with you off air to get more detail about that. But in the meantime, what website can we send everyone to for more information about the Big Sky Fund and everything you're doing?
Yeah, I'd love to send them to biocarbontechnologies.com. That's where we're going to hit the fertilizer hard, so it's biocarbontechnologies.com. Thank you.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks so much for being on the show. And I'll see everyone next week.
Thanks, Jennifer.